Adjectives on the typewriter. He moves his words like a prize fighter.
Amongst creaky chairs and a large table in the basement of the Village Bean Coffee Shop in Albany, you can find the Creative Circle, a group of writers who support each other in their individual quests for expressing the wildest of ideas. From fiction to poetry to nonfiction to family instructional guidebooks, all forms of writing are welcomed and shared, laughed over, cried over, and critiqued. This multi-generational group comes to the written page from a variety of perspectives, but they all share one thing. They love the written word and how it brings their ideas into reality.
She has some to choose from.
Let's see. Well, my name is Linda Larson, and I'm a writer who was looking for a group where I could share my writing. And I tried to find other writers, and I found that a lot of people weren't as dedicated to it as I was. It was more of a hobby, and for me, it's a lifestyle. Which doesn't pay very well, but that's what I'm doing. And so I thought, you know what, I think I'm going about this the wrong way. I'm looking for a group that's, you know, about writing, but maybe other creative artists would be in the same situation I am, where you sit in a little room, you stare at a computer or you stare at your blank page or whatever it is, and you're alone, and you want somebody to be there for you for the highs and be there for you for the lows. And I thought, you know what, I need something that's going to support me through the highs and the lows. Not necessarily be the critic for my writing, and not necessarily be the person pushing me to get my work done, but the person who's going to be almost like a witness to what I've been doing. And I thought, well, this would also work for other artists as well. So when Avon Art started up, I used them as a vehicle to advertise for a creative circle. And this idea comes from the Julia Cameron Artist Way book series. I just put the word out, and some people started showing up. And what do you know, more people started showing up, and some people stayed. And we have this great group now where all of us, I think, we're all in kind of the same situation. We're all creative in different ways. And we're all accepting of our creativity, and we're all supportive of it. And we have high highs. We have a high here today with the new book. And we've had low lows, too. And we pull each other out of those lows, and we celebrate the highs. And we understand, because we know what it's like to sit alone in front of a blank page, so we can share this together. And it just has sort of turned out that we're mostly writers, but we've been open to anybody, any kind of creative person ever.
So. And we've had them.
Yes, and we have had them, yes. Yeah, so.
Nice. Yeah. Wow. Well, so how long has this group been in existence then?
How long has it been?
3 years.
Has it been 3 years?
Yeah, like
yeah. Yeah. Yeah, we all have different specialties too, which is really interesting.
We'll find that out.
Would you like to start out with your specialty? Maybe say what it is.
Okay, well, what is my specialty? I guess it's writing.
Gardening.
Yeah, gardening. I have a book about gardening. My gardening book is called Grow It, Eat It, and it is a gardening book with recipes, and that's sort of my published writing. I also write for the St. Cloud Times once a month as part of the St. Cloud Times writers group. But I love fiction, and so fiction is what I write for fun. I did bring a very short excerpt because I'm very nervous about my fiction. This is from Housebound. It's a novella about an old ghost that helps a young mother while they share the same house. And these are just the first paragraphs where we get a glimpse of Maud the ghost. So this is Housebound. Thought is a luxury. I've never had time to think. Now I'm content in my own home, and with this new family moving in, I shall have plenty to keep me busy. I am in no hurry. Now I have time to sort out all the jumbled thoughts that have gathered over the years. I'd catch a fleeting thought on my tongue, chew it around a bit, only to spit it out when my husband came home asking about clean shirts. Now I am ready for a feast of thoughts, ready to savor each one, though I admit to being distracted by all the life around me. Though I don't know how I came to be here, I do know I have something to figure out. I have to eat my fill before I leave this table. And that's enough about me. I'm going to be the focus of attention.
Well, thank you. Can you tell me your name and what brings you to the writer's
room? I'm Maureen Graham, and I've been in the group not quite a year yet, and I'm coming off of about a 20-year creative block. And so to be in this group is a privilege, and these people keep me honest and keep me focused on the task, which is to produce something. And I am a poet, and I have been published in the past, not recently, and I'm working on that.
Yeah, you kind of have to force yourself to keep going. That was one of the big reasons why I started up a poet, or I have started up poetry readings. And it's just like, okay, if we do this every month, it means I've got to make something every month.
Right.
And otherwise, it's just too easy to just kind of fade.
Do it tomorrow.
Yes, exactly. But it's never tomorrow for some reason. It's always today. I don't know.
If you don't take that little spark for a poem, when it hits you, it can be gone a lot of times. So can't wait.
Yeah. Well, would you like to share a little something?
Sure. Well, this one takes the title from Richard Wilbur, the poet, his poem, The Beautiful Changes, if you're familiar with that. It's called, Your Hands Hold Roses Always in a Way. Your hands hold roses always in a way. I was fascinated by your hands at the dinner. Carefully, you reached for your water glass. I had forgotten how large, strong, solid, and smooth. I remembered their warmth. Their motion carried your sentences. They shook, betraying your emotions. They continually moved, yet you did not eat. I watched you talking, but your hands spoke to me, revealing all. And I remembered again how they felt as they touched me.
So where do you feel that your poetry is coming from, I guess you could say?
It's coming from my reaction to things around me, you know, and I just have to, I don't know, you're a poet too, I just feel like it's kind of like breathing, you have to just keep doing it. And it's how I see things and just expressing myself in that way.
Hey, I'm Tom Prill, and I write just kind of as a hobby now. All through school, I've always had my red marks all over the place, and spelling check on the computer has allowed me to write somewhat better, but you can ask an editor and they'd still say no, what's writing is terrible. But I do like the creative part of writing, and that's what I do. I kind of started a little bit of a series, and my friends are reading it, and they keep saying it's my life, but it really isn't. And I have a little story on that I guess I can read. And I've been at the group approximately since the beginning, I think. I came right away. Okay. And I do read, have been published with a couple of children's stories, but they were, it was non-paying a situation, but I've been published too, I guess. Mm-hmm. A friend. Tears slowly turned to icicles on George's cheek. It was a cold January night as he walked home from Sam's wake. George did not feel the cold, just the pain of guilt. He had killed Sam. 2 years ago, Mabel had left George. That fall while duck hunting with Sam, George said, I watched my father die of Alzheimer's. I know the same fate awaits me. Before I forget everything, I will let the car run in the garage with the door shut. That seems the best way. You'll just go to sleep. Sam protested. People know you committed suicide. George answered, I will back in the door, then pull ahead. They will think I was confused and left the car run as I tried to figure out what to do. George remembered Sam, just looked at him in disbelief that morning. Nothing more was said. Last summer, George noticed Sam was forgetting things. George was worried about this, but shrugged it off as we all forget things as we get older. In September, George picked up Sam for fishing. As George walked up the sidewalk, Jill came running out to meet him. She hugged George, tried to hold back the tears, then cried out, Sam has Alzheimer's. Fall turned to winter, and George worked part-time from 10 to 2. Once the lake had frozen over, George set his fish house up. Sam wanted to be in the fish house. Jill and George decided that Sam was able to sit in the fish house for a few hours by himself. Before going to work, George would pick up Sam, take him to the fish house. George would help Sam set up for fishing. Before leaving, George had made sure Sam's cell phone was working. George continued walking home. All he could think about was 3 days ago and wondering why he didn't see it. He kept playing over in his head what happened that day. He picked up Sam for fishing. Jill met George at the door with a big smile. Sam is having a great day. As they left the house, Jill kissed Sam and said, "I'm going to St. Cloud shopping with some friends. Bring home some fish." Sam was about to get into the car when he walked back to Jill, hugged her, and said, "I love you." When they came to the fish house, George turned on the heater and made sure that the vent was open. Sam looked at the vent and closed it open, saying, "Always make sure the vent is open." George answered back, "Yes, always keep the vent open." George then walked to his car. Sam did something strange. He followed George. At the car, Sam got teary-eyed and said, "You know, the medication affects my emotions." He wiped away a tear and continued, "I want you to know how much I've always treasured our friendship." Sam hugged George, and George hugged him back as they both cried. Sam went back to the fish house and George to his car. Sam turned and shouted, "I will keep the vent open." At noon, George received a call from Jill, who was very worried. Sam isn't answering his phone. George then knew. Sam was saying goodbye this morning. He shouted to Jill, "I will go check on him. You call 911. When George came to the lake, he saw the rescue squad next to the fish house. He drove to the fish house and watched Sam's dead body being loaded into the ambulance. As George got out of his car, Bill, the fire chief, came over and held him back, saying, "He forgot to open the vent."
Well, where did that come from? Is that...
I don't really know. I wanted to show emotions, I guess, between guys. And I think that's how it started. And I wanted to show feelings, and I didn't know what else, so I just went with that. So I could have came up with cancer or anything else, but all the time...
It's not from his life.
No, it's not from my life. My father-in-law died of Alzheimer's, so maybe... My wife was doing a little bit of research back then when he had it. Mm-hmm. So maybe I got the idea back then at that time.
Yeah.
Of what happened.
Yeah.
And no friend has died or anything, so that's nobody committed suicide.
He's very good at little twists in plot. He does provocative things with plot. He's creative. He's very creative.
I'm Phyllis Sather, and I'm a wife and a mother and a homeschool mom. These three are mine. They've all graduated from high school. They've only been homeschooled. They've never been in a school situation. Rebecca has completed a web design course through a distance ed college, and the other two are working on a lot of things. I guess I've been a writer all my life. Choices that I made prevented me from doing a lot of writing. Being a homeschool mom, you don't have a lot of time besides doing that. And then in 2006, my husband asked me, we've done planning weekends since 1996, and when we say we're going on a planning weekend, people say, "Well, what is a planning weekend?" You know. So we had some little notes that we give out and say, "Well, this is what we do." And anyway, in 2006, during our planning weekend, he said, "I think it's time, now the kids are older, you should put this into a book." I said, "Okay." So in December of 2006, I realized I had done nothing. And so I quickly wrote a few notes so I had something to show when we went into our 2007 planning weekend in January. And shortly after that, I signed up for an online writing course called So You Want to Be a Writer. And through that, I really was encouraged to sit down and really make this book happen. So in July 2007, it went online as an ebook, and then we, Rebecca and Eric read it and made it into an MP3 file, and then my main audience has been homeschool mothers because that's where I've got the connections, and they multitask, so they wanted the MP3. And then they started asking for a handbook so that they could just take that along and they'd have the whole thing laid out for them. So we did that. And now in this last year, I was just one of the companies that sells my book online just offered a print-on-demand option. And so all four of us have been involved in that. Rebecca did my back cover. Emily did all my editing. He did the layout. And I did the writing. And... when Emily was editing this the last time, she said, "You know, we need to put this together for kids. This has influenced my life so much." that this needs to reach the young adult group. So the three of us, probably the four, we'll hook him in somewhere, are planning to put together purposeful planning for young adults. It started in 1996 when my husband asked me to go away with him for a couple of days and set goals. I dreaded it. I didn't want to go. My kids were 5, 3, and 1, and he had leukemia. And all I was doing was surviving. I didn't have time to set any goals at all. And so, but he insisted, so we did go away just overnight. And he didn't mean set goals. He really knew that we were struggling as mothers and as marriage. There just wasn't time for everything with such a sick child and trying to homeschool. And what he wanted was to encourage me and to see what he could do that would help me through this. And he wanted me to do that for him, too. So after our 2 days, we decided that we would do this again the next year, but that we would try to take our children along because we really missed them and we wanted to. We tend to do things as a family, and that's really built cohesiveness for our family. So we started doing that every year, making a proactive decision to be proactive about our lives. Where was our family going? Where did we want it to go? We set it up so that we would be at a hotel, the kids would have swimming time, we could talk on the edge. We put in a movie, we could talk. So the way we were going, we had 4 one-hour sessions per day and stayed 4 days. That gave us 16 hours to talk. You can talk about a lot in 16 hours. And so this is just after I started explaining our system, and it says, if you're counting the hours of talking, here are the totals. If you have 4 one-hour sessions per day and stay for 4 days, that gives you 16 hours to talk. Perhaps it doesn't seem like much time out of 4 days, but when was the last time you had 16 hours to talk with your husband when you had his undivided attention? One woman recently asked me if her honeymoon counted. Perhaps now you're catching a glimpse of why I like these weekends so much. Planning weekends give you time to dream, to talk together about what you wish or want at a time when the other person is really listening. And that's really the message I've got. We give it away to all military families because after I sold a couple to military families, they would write and say, this is so good for us to reconnect. Nobody has to bring up a touchy object because it's in the format. You follow the format, it's there. And we talk about it. And it was just a really good way for them to reconnect after being separated for a year or 18 months. And so after those comments, we decided to give it away to all military families. And that's really been a blessing to hear how it's affected their lives.
You're listening to KVSC and a feature on The Creative Circle, a writer's group which meets the first and third Fridays out in Albany at the Village Bean Coffee Shop. And now we head back into the basement to hear from Jeanette Clancy.
I've been writing for a long time, but I thought of this when Phyllis was saying that she didn't write until she was 50. I think it was almost that long. It was in my late 30s, and before that I had no idea that I would be doing what I'm doing. I have had 2 local histories published, and an essay in an anthology about patriarchy. I've had many articles published, local and national. I've appeared quite a bit on the St. Cloud Times opinion page. I've fairly regularly have letters in National Catholic Reporter. And my passion now is a book that I put out. It came out 3 years ago, God Is Not Three Guys in the Sky, Cherishing Christianity Without Its Exclusive Claims. And I'm blogging about that. So I'm blogging about religions and spirituality. And I'm trying to show people of faith and people who really are hostile to religion even, that there is common ground. There is common ground they stand on. And many don't know that. Well, I tried being an atheist earlier in my life. So it's a reaction against what they perceive as hypocrisy, fraud, and foolishness in religion, and not going, moving beyond that to see what religion is really trying to do. It's each religion is one way of imagining spiritual reality, which in the West we call God. Yeah. Now, in the West, we imagine God to be an individual. And, you know, now we're examining ideas coming from the East and from all over. And the spiritual reality is attaining more filled out dimensions in human minds. And so there's this lovely transition we're going to. It's very exciting. But in the meantime, we have to deal with all the hostility. Yeah.
I'm curious what you brought to read.
I chose something that's not controversial. So, spooky but comforting. Barbara Bradley Haggerty, NPR's religion correspondent, examined the question, is there evidence for a spiritual dimension? As she was researching the question for her book, Fingerprints of God, In Search of the Science of Spirituality, she was a little embarrassed, spooked, to find herself experiencing transcendence. Haggerty wanted to know, is God only the result of chemical processes, of nerve cells, of a God spot in the brain? Does transcendence actually exist? She concluded that science can't prove or disprove God, but that people really do experience spirit. There is something there. Non-believers don't accept this, but I count myself among believers, and I mean more than religious people. We think spiritual entities touch us at certain times. The inner realm breaks into our outer lives with messages. We don't make them up, although we can develop better antennae to receive them by cultivating meditative habits, mindfulness. Polls say most people believe in something beyond the surface world, spiritual reality, and we base this belief on experiences. Before her daughter's death, Annalie Woodstrom had visions of a death skeleton dancing the Totentanz she'd learned about in her native Germany. Amid feelings of urgency and doom, she hurried to finish remodeling daughter Sandy's room. Right after it was completed, Sandy died in a car accident. In no way can natural science explain Annalie's premonition or other uncanny events. My aunts once were rescued from carbon monoxide poisoning by their cousin hearing a voice that insisted, "Call them." A few days before he was assassinated, Abraham Lincoln dreamed people in the White House were mourning an assassinated president. These events defy rational explanation. To materialists, these weird happenings are just coincidences, because they believe that physical, not spiritual, reality causes events and our thoughts. To believers in spiritual reality, they signify a source of pattern and meaning independent of external causes. They spook us with strange attraction and power, the feeling that we're stepping into an otherworldly realm. Tell a story like this, and others will tell more. Cindy tells of sitting at her mom's computer in a laundry room when the Cremation Society wheeled her just-deceased mom's body out the door, and one of her sisters put the sheets from mom's bed into her six-month-old wash machine about 5 feet away. The washer started beeping, and a light flashed from an error code. In the washer user guide, Cindy found the code. Motherboard is out. "This is the honest-to-God truth," she said. "I knew it was Mom talking to me. The rest of my family thought I was nuts, but I know it was her. That couldn't have been a coincidence. We had all been using that washing machine for the past week and had no problems with it at all." In The Varieties of Religious Experience, philosopher-psychologist William James quotes many persons who experience the inner dimension, which they call God. They can't be talked out of believing something spiritual communicated with them. God is more real to me than any thought or thing or person. God surrounds me like a physical atmosphere. Their conviction, writes James, is based on feelings much more convincing than results established by mere logic ever are. James had little respect for the poo-pooing of rationalists. Something in you absolutely knows that that result must be truer than any logic-chopping rationalistic talk, however clever, that may contradict it. Because William James and Barbara Bradley Haggerty present evidence of a dimension beyond ordinary sensory knowledge from a scientific perspective, they have much credibility for me. They also console and uplift me.
Well, so what kind of events do you guys have coming up?
Do you have something that you want to finish before?
Well, I want to make sure that you know about our publication, which is coming up, Nota Bene.
Nota Bene.
Yep. So it's N-O-T-A-B-E-N-E. It's Latin for note well. And we started this last year in conjunction with Avon Area Arts, and now we're doing it with the Albany Friends of the Library. And then we're going to have a publication and a party on October 19th, 6:30 to 7:30 p.m. at the Albany Library. And we're going to celebrate all the writers that are in this publication. They'll get a chance to read their work. If they have other works to sell, they can sell them there. So, for example, Jeanette will probably be selling her book, and you'll probably be selling your book, too. And so it's sort of a celebration of the Central Minnesota writer, because we don't see a whole lot of that. There's always, you know, the publications tend to be national, or they tend to be university-specific, but there's nothing that just celebrates the in-between writer, someone who's not in college, someone who's not at the national level. So that's what we're trying to do, celebrate the local writers.
Well, I think one thing I want to say about our group is that I just love how we come from so many different backgrounds. We're intergenerational, mm-hmm. And we all have different bits of wisdom that we share with one another, and it's just, it's a good mix. I think that's the best mm-hmm. way to put it. Yeah.
We support each other a lot.
Without necessarily agreeing with each other all the time.
Very good observation. Supporting doesn't mean agreeing.
Right. Yeah. Because I do provocative stuff. And that's why I chose something that was less provocative for this. But what I normally write on my blog is quite. Many people would consider it controversial. I'm trying to make it palatable for everyone.
Accessible as well.
Accessible. Accessible is a better term. That's really what I'm trying to achieve.
Yeah.
Is ideas that are considered, that are certainly unfamiliar to some people, and seem to be entering the conventional viewpoint in astonishing numbers and rapidity. It's amazing how quickly things are changing from 10, 20 years ago. Acceptable now and really frowned on then.
Adjectives on the type.
For more information on the Creative Circle, you can go to the Avon Area Arts website at www.frontporcharts.com and look for the half sheet link, or you can email Linda Larson directly at notesforlinda@hotmail.com, and in that address, the 4 is the number 4, or you can drop in at the Village Bean out in Albany on the first and third Fridays of the month at 10 a.m. And when you order something, just ask them to point you in the right direction. And as they say in the Creative Circle, we are mostly writers, but we welcome anyone to discuss the pleasures and the pitfalls of a creative life. This has been Jeff Carmack reporting for KVSC News. This report was made possible through the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and was produced by KVSC, a proud member of independent public radio.
Say it all, say somebody. I got to say.